Last week, I told you, as we went through the remaining part of chapter 23, David has headed out into the wilderness of Ziph, they call it. It was there that the Ziphites, you remember, they were saying, "Hey, Saul, David's on the run from Saul. He has departed from Saul. It is official. Saul is trying to kill David. He hates him. He knows that in all reality that David is going to be the next king of Israel, and so he's trying to prevent that from happening," which basically is trying to prevent God's will, which is impossible to do. And so David went, and he was hiding in the wilderness area of Ziph, which is on the, if you're in Jerusalem, Judah, it's up and over the hill on the west side of the Jordan, but out in the Jordanian Valley. And so there the Ziphites were saying that, you know, they kind of gave David up, got a hold of Saul, told him, "Hey, he's out here, we'll give him to you." And so it's an interesting thing how God is refining David, preparing him to be the king, preparing, but also at the same time revealing to the whole nation that David is going to be the king that they've always longed for. So one of the things that we have continued to learn over and over and over, whether through the Old Testament or through the New Testament, is that God is continually revealing our hearts to us and sometimes to those that are around us. How we react to and how we respond to certain circumstances, certain situations, is God's method. He will bring in storms into our life. He will bring disappointment, all of these different things. And oftentimes, we focus in on the trial, we focus in on the circumstance, when really and truly we should be focusing in on what's coming out of our heart. What is it that God is trying to show us here? And so we're seeing that taking place in the life of David, that all of a sudden these guys rat him out, Saul finds out about it, and yet we saw in the tail end of chapter 23 where David went down to the rock. It is called the Rock of Escape. And so we're seeing David's heart being revealed over and over and over again, that he truly is a man of God, that he truly does know how to deal with these radical circumstances that are taking place in his life. And so it ends with, David then went up from there and dwelt in the strongholds of En-Gedi. So chapter 24 begins, but before, hold your spot here and turn with me to the right to Psalm 54, because I'm going to try and connect all of the psalms that David wrote during this particular period of time, because I think it's kind of cool the way that it connects what's going on in the life of David. It kind of adds some color and it adds some fragrance to, you know, these events that are taking place in the life of David. But look what it says in Psalm 54. It says, "To the chief musician," notice right at the top in the introduction before it gets to verse 1, "with stringed instruments, a contemplation of David when the Ziphites went and said to Saul, 'Is not David hiding among us?'" So when David found out that they ratted him out, he sat down and wrote this psalm. Isn't that interesting? "Save me, O God, by your name, and vindicate me by your strength. Hear my prayer, O God. Give ear to the words of my mouth. For strangers have risen up against me, and oppressors have sought after my life. They have not set God before them. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is with those who uphold my life. He will repay my enemies for the evil. Cut them off in your truth. I will freely sacrifice to you. I will praise your name, O Lord, for it is good. For he has delivered me out of all trouble, and my eye has seen its desire upon my enemy." So what happens with David when he gets disappointed, he's hiding, the group of people find out that he's hiding, and they go and tell Saul? What does David do? Does he get angry? Does he get all stressed out? Does he get bummed out? No. What does he do? He turns to the Lord. He writes a psalm. So what comes out of David's heart when this circumstance takes place? What is revealed in his heart? That David says, "Hey, even though all of this stuff is happening, strangers are against me, people are after my life, but God is my helper." Man, what an awesome thing to be revealed in a person's heart. So, you know, what are you going through? Is somebody trying to kill you? Anybody here in the room, anybody's trying to kill him? No. Anyone in this room where, you know, you've been disappointed? Yes. Anyone in this room maybe facing a tough time of difficulty? Yes. What comes out of our heart? Well, you ain't seen nothing yet. Take a look back in 1 Samuel 24. Now it happened, remember what took place, God saved David's life because he had him almost surrounded. God allowed the Philistines to come in and attack Israel. And so Saul hears about the attack going on in Israel. He has to turn around and go back and deal with the Philistines. So God saves David. And so now it happened, when Saul had returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, "Take note, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." And so Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all of Israel and went to seek David and his men in or on the rocks of the wild goats. So I told you we would have some pictures. So turn your eyes up here and let me show you what En-Gedi looks like. It's still there, by the way. To this day, if you go to Israel with us, this is the rocks of the wild goats, as you can see them. So right here, this is the valley that you would go into, and we'll get to the cave where David was hiding. This is just the path that you walk along the way. There's a little creek that runs through here, because we'll see that when we get up, there's little ones all along the way. Now we're getting into the area where David and his men would have been hiding. Okay, next one. Keep going. So, as you can see, here's the pathway. They've actually got it fixed up. These were actually made there by King David. Just kidding. And so you can see it's not a real tough walk, but for some that bad knees and whatnot, they didn't make this trek. Yeah, there was Christina. So you can kind of see the area right here. This is the path that leads us up. See the waterfall coming down here? Beautiful. Okay, next one. And this is the waterfall. Now, this would have been, they believe that the cave is literally right here. But from an earthquake, a big chunk, the top part of the cave, fell off and exposed this and actually helped create the waterfall. So I just had Josh load up a bunch of them, so we'll clip along through them. Go ahead. Look at that. So you can kind of see the size and immensity of what this cave would have been like with the top over the top, but it broke off during an earthquake. Ah, what do you see there? Uh-huh. The wild goats, you see? Okay, look at them. Aren't they cute? Look at laser tag. Oops, I'm sorry. There's some more. They're literally all over the place to this day. Now, this is called a rock badger. And in Proverbs, I think, 29, 28, let me see. Well, Mara, you find it for me. I think, or it might even be Proverbs 30, that it speaks of the rock badger. And that's what they look like. They're basically about the size of a rabbit. In fact, I think Josh has, we got a couple of live ones. Aren't they stinking cute, man? And they're all over the place in that area also. Ah, this is Moshe, our bus driver. And look at him eyeballing that kid's ice cream. Anyway, and so this just gives you an idea of the wilderness area that we're in, that David would have been in while he's on the run from Saul, you see? Okay. That's the Dead Sea. So we got a couple of videos. Here's the cave.
Beautiful waterfall. There's another one? Oh. I think we're going to go further up.
At the end of this trail. That's the most beautiful one.
Awesome. David's Waterfall? Imagine what this was like during David's time. All right. On our trip.
Okay. I think you got a couple of them. Christina!
Well, actually, this is David's Waterfall. This used to actually be a cave up here, but now it's been home. And this is where David would have
seen. This would have all been a part of the cave. You can see how many people are in this area right here.
Isn't this beautiful?
So you can easily see how David and his 600 guys could have been in here no problem.
Oh, sure. Just a second.
Hey, that was Joseph, too. Did you see that? Joseph was standing right by her. So you getting the idea of what this cave would have been like? I know it's pretty hard with Josh at the helm of the camera, but anybody getting seasick? So, oh, there's a rock badger. Look.
Here is the infamous rock badger. But now he's a tree badger.
Yeah.
He's got a bunch of buddies up here, too.
They usually lay around on the rocks because they're warm. But these guys in this area, they climb around in the trees. Isn't that crazy? Look at, see that?
Here's a little rock badger.
And they're about the size of a rabbit.
Hey, little guy. Oh, did I scare you off a little
bit? It's the protector of the cave. Now, this is from up on top where we actually do a Bible study. There's a little park at the very top of the location, and you can actually see all the way down. But this, you see the park right here? Woo! We're going fast. And Dead Sea out here. And kind of gives you just some ideas of what the area would have been like that David would have been hiding from Saul in. And then we come up onto the top up here, and this is where we, right over here, we do our Bible study. Okay. Okay. So does that give you an idea of what we're dealing with? So now, if you would like to see more of that, applications to go to with us to Israel in 07 are out on the foyer table, and you can see it live, and you can take your own pictures of the ibex and the rock badgers. And what chapter is it? Chapter 30, verse 26, it talks about the rock badgers who make their home upon the rock. And so it talks about the wise creatures that God has made. So if you, it's kind of a fun thing that, and I've done a study on that kind of is fun, that we can be like the little rock badgers. If you make your home in the rock, there is safety there because Jesus is our rock, you know. So we can be like a little rock badger, defenseless in and of ourselves. You can see they're not like, they don't have fangs or anything. They can't attack anything, and they certainly don't run very fast. But when you make your home in the rock, even for us as Christians, we can find our defense in the rock. So anyway, back to our section here. So David now has, you know, Saul's intelligence gathering group has said David is in the hills of En-Gedi. And so they now know that he's in En-Gedi. But as you can see, it would be a very large area. But it's interesting to find out what's going to happen next. So, verse 3. He came to the sheepfolds by the road, where there was a cave. So this would have been, there's many caves all around in that particular area. But this cave, when it would have been intact, would have been the largest cave that there would have been in the area. So it's very, very obvious that that was the cave that David would have been hiding in. He's got 600 guys with him. And so Saul went in to attend to his needs. Do I need to explain that to anyone? Do we all understand what that probably means? Okay? We all on board with that? Okay. So, he goes in to take care of business. And isn't this interesting? So he goes in to take care of business, and David and his men were staying in the recesses of the cave. So let me ask you guys a question. Saul's intelligence committee tells them, David is in the area of En-Gedi. Saul and his men come into this particular area. Saul goes into a cave to use the restroom. And there is David's 600 guys in the same exact cave. So let me just ask you a question. A couple questions. How smart are Saul's intelligence gathering guys if they say he's in the area somewhere and they release him to go into a cave? And there is Saul's guy, or there is all David's guys. So they must not have been too intelligent in their intelligence gathering. Or in addition to, just let me ask you one big question. Who do you think is in control over all of this stuff? Absolutely. Just so happens that the cave that Saul chooses to go into to use the restroom is where 600 guys are waiting. Now you tell me that's a coincidence. God is saying, David, it's all, I've got you. Everything is under control. So now watch what happens. So then the men, verse 4, of David said to him, "Oh, David, this is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it seems good to you.'" Now let me ask you guys a question. Have we in our study ever read anything like that so far? Not at all. We've read many different things, but we have never read anywhere where God said to David, "I am going to bring Saul into your hand so you can kill him." Right? What has God said? Well, turn back to the left to 1 Samuel chapter 15. Let's just get a quick reminder, because it's very important that we make a point at this juncture. Look at it, 1 Samuel 15. Look what it says in verse 28. He says, we can't use that one yet. I don't want you to see that one yet. So skip that one. We'll come back to that one. Go to chapter 16, verse 1, okay? But pretend like you didn't see that one. Okay? "And the Lord said to Samuel, 'How long will you mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn and go. I am sending you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided myself a king among his sons.'" Okay? So he said, "I've rejected Saul," but do you see there where he says, "I'm going to give you a guy that you're going to anoint as the king and he can kill him"? No. Okay? Go ahead and turn to chapter 20. Take a look at 20:15. Let's just see something. And this all has a point, you'll see. Verse 14. "And you shall not only show me kindness," this is where Jonathan and David were talking. "You shall not only show me the kindness of the Lord while I still live, that I may not die, but you shall not cut off your kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord has cut off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." And so Jonathan and David made a covenant. Jonathan knew that David was going to take over the kingdom. Do you see there where Jonathan said, "And after you kill my father"? No, we don't see that, do we? And so even on into chapter 23 that we just read last week, even at verse 17, if you look back up there, "And he said to him, 'Do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you.' Even my father Saul knows that." So what we have is several instances where God is speaking through Samuel or through Jonathan, where David knows he has been anointed to be the king. People know this, but nowhere do we see that God has said, "David, he is going to bring Saul right into your presence so you can kill him." So why do I make a big deal out of that? It's because there are going to be times in your life and in my life where people have the ability to come to you and to come to me with a misunderstanding of what God's will is for our life. There will be people that will come to you that will have a misunderstanding of the Scriptures, to where they will take what God has said, twist it, tweak it, or whatever, and then try to present that as a truth for you or for me. And it's very, very important that we don't get sucked into that, that we know what did God really say, because if not, that can get us into huge trouble. I can't tell you how many times I've had people tell me, Rob, the Lord's told me to tell you. And more often times than that, I will usually say, well, I appreciate that. And when the Lord tells me that, personally, because he has the ability to tell me that, because I am faithfully in my devotions, I pray and I'm listening for the Lord's word to me. When he confirms that to me, then I'll act upon it. But it's very important then that we understand what does the Word of God say, because if not, it can actually get us into big trouble. Now, what if David would have said, wow, was that your interpretation of what God said? Well, then let's go kill him. David would have gotten himself into huge trouble, wouldn't he? And so it's very important for you and for me that we are also in our Word, that we understand what the Word of God says, so that it can't be twisted or tweaked even by well-meaning people. Because, think about this for just a moment. David walks into this cave. Here he is with 600 guys. Saul comes in alone, takes off his coat, takes care of business. It would almost appear that God brought Saul right into David's grasp, wouldn't it? But David knows. Exodus 20 says, thou shalt not murder. David knows many things that are going to be revealed in this particular chapter that are going to reveal the heart of David as Israel's next king. And so watch what David says. So the men said, David, this is it, man. And so David arose. Well, we'll go back. This is the day which the Lord said to you, behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as seems good to you. So David arose and secretly cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Now it happened afterward that David's heart troubled him because he had cut Saul's robe. So this conviction begins to come into David's heart. What have I just done? I have just disrespected the king that God has set up. Notice he didn't go kill him like his guys told him to do. But David does something that's very interesting. He goes over, Saul's robe is laying there. He takes it up, takes out his sword, cuts off a chunk of Saul's robe. But then the conviction began to settle in because David is thinking, what did I just do? I just cut off his robe. I cut a piece of his robe off, and he began to feel convicted. Now, I pondered on that for a little while, thinking, you know, what was the big deal with that because of what David's going to do with that? What he's going to do with this little piece of the robe? And I'm wondering something. If David had heard about something that had transpired, the one that I didn't want you to read a few moments ago, let's go back and look at that. 1 Samuel 15. In 1 Samuel 15, you remember, that's the whole story of King Agag when Saul did not obey and kill all of the Amalekites. He didn't take care of King Agag. And so that is when verse 26, well, after he had already told Saul that, after Samuel had already told Saul that he was being rejected as the king. And so in verse 26, it said, but Samuel said to Saul, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you from being king over Israel. And as Samuel turned around to go away, Saul seized the edge of his robe, and it tore. So Samuel said to him, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today, and has given it to a neighbor of yours who is better than you. And also the strength, or if you will, the God of Israel will not lie nor relent, for he is not a man that he should relent. I'm wondering, you guys, if the conviction of David had to do with maybe Samuel told this story to David and said, let me tell you about the time that God gave me this amazing illustration. As I turned to walk away from Saul after he had been rejected, Saul reached out, he grabbed a hold of my robe and tore a piece of the robe off. And it was at that point I was able to turn around and tell Saul, Saul, just as you have just taken that piece, so God has removed the kingdom from you. And now David cuts a piece of the robe, of Saul's robe. And I wonder if somewhere in this process, David was thinking back of this event that took place between Saul and Samuel. And David is now recognizing, oh man, this is a classic illustration of the same thing, where David is saying Saul has been rejected. The robe of Samuel. Now I've done something to the robe of Saul. And I wonder, I mean, I'm not sure. It could just be simply disrespect that he feels like he disrespected the king of Israel. But I'm wondering if he was putting a piece together. We'll have to find out when we get there and we can ask David personally. But it is interesting that this robe thing comes up again. And so, back over to chapter 24. David's heart troubles him, and so he then turns around to his men in verse 6. And he says to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David restrained his servants with these words, because probably some of the guys were saying, David, if you won't kill him, I'll kill him. Let me go get him. He brought him right here to us. I'll take care of him. And David then turns around and says, no, nobody's going to kill him. He is the Lord's anointed. In other words, he is the one that God has placed as the king of Israel. He has been the one that God has put into this position. And so David restrained his servants and would not allow them to rise against Saul. And Saul got up from the cave and went on his way. So David also arose afterwards, went out of the cave, and called out to Saul, saying, and I'm just going to give you, I want you to see how David is speaking to the king. I circled the different words that he uses. My lord the king. You hear that? He doesn't go out and say, hey Saul, you stinking jerk. You loser. Right? What does he say? My lord the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and he bowed down. And David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of the men who say, indeed, David seeks your harm. Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you into my hand in the cave. And someone urged me to kill you. So even David is recognizing something that he was, you know, God brought him right into the same cave. David is recognizing and realizing that of all the caves that were there, this is the cave that Saul comes into. And he recognizes the divine appointment. He tells him, you know, one of my guys told me to kill you, but I didn't do it. And he says, my eye spared you. And I said, I will not stretch out my hand against, look at what he refers to him as, my Lord. For he is the Lord's anointed. Moreover, my father. Now, is he his father? Yes. Don't forget that he married one of Saul's daughters. Moreover, my father, see, yes, the corner of your robe is in my hand. For in that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you. Know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand. And I have not sinned against you. Yet you hunt my life to take it. So let the Lord judge between you and me. And let the Lord avenge me on you. But my hand shall not be against you. As the proverb of the ancients says, wickedness proceeds from the wicked, or you know, out of a wicked heart comes a wicked action. But my hand shall not be against you. And so here we see that in this instant, David has an opportunity. This is an amazing test. And God brings him right into David's hands. David's well-meaning buddies put pressure on him. David, kill him. You got 600 guys in this cave. They could have easily taken Saul out. It would have been no problem. The peer pressure, so for some of you that are here that are younger, some of you that I see that are here in our college age groups, that are in the college age, maybe even going to college, there is going to be peer pressure upon you, but there's peer pressure on all of us, just different levels, to do the wrong thing, to react in the wrong way, to do something that would be contrary to the Word of God. Would it have been easy for David to murder an innocent, defenseless guy while he's in there taking care of business? Of course, that would have been an easy thing for David to do. He could have easily taken him out. Saul is innocent, or not innocent, but he was at a vulnerable state. David could have easily taken him out. But David knew one thing for sure. Thou shalt not murder. David knew another thing, and this was huge. David knew that God is in control, and he bringing him into this cave was exact proof of that. That God is in control. David is sitting in that cave, and he says, all right, if God is so much in control that he could bring this man into my cave, then God has got enough control to take this man off the throne. It's not going to be my sword that is going to murder him. I'm not going to take the throne by way of murder for many reasons, because then that sets a tone that then David, other people would look at David and say, hey man, David killed Saul. That's how he got the throne. Other people might then say, well, if David murdered to get in, then why shouldn't I? And David would have been a marked man himself. But David knew and he trusted the fact that, hey, you know what? When I take the throne, it's going to be because God puts me there, not because I take the man out. And so David's heart is being revealed to this group of people, to all of his men. It's also being revealed to Saul, because he had his chance. And he says, hey, Saul, here's the deal, pal. I could have taken you out. Look, I got a piece of your robe. If I could have got a piece of your robe, I could have hacked your head. But I chose not to do it. Even all my guys told me to do it. And I said, no, that's not my job. That's going to be God's job. But I also wanted to draw your attention to something else. David is, he knows that God is watching. And so therein is an important key for all of us in this room. That there is not any place that we can call a secret place. Even in a cave out in the Judean desert, in the Ziphite desert. And this is something that really, as for those of you that are doing your the one-year Bible, man, is this just not becoming very, very vivid? Oh, I can hide from you, and you can hide from me, and we can have a secret place from each other. And we can wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning if you want. And we might be able to think that we're getting away with something in secret. But there is not one secret place from the eyes of God. He sees it all. He sees everything. And that's an interesting thing. I'm reading a book right now on sexual purity, trying to find a real good book for our men. And it's interesting. One of the questions that I read that it lists this series of questions. And one of the questions had to do with, what do you do with your, with to the effect of, what will you do with the time that you have in secret? And you know what? To me, I think that's a faulty question. There is no such thing as a time that is a place, if you will, or a time of a secret time. Because I have come to learn that God sees it all. Everything that we do, no matter where we try to hide, no matter what it is that we're seeking to try to accomplish, there is no such thing as a secret place. God knows, He sees everything. Well, I'll just buy my alcohol at this store down the hill, then no one will know in my community what I'm doing. But listen, does God not know where that liquor store is at? I'll just get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and turn on the internet while my wife is sleeping because that will be a I'll be able to keep it a secret from her. Well, look, we can keep it from each other. We can't keep it from God. David knew that. He understood that. And he says, look, I could have easily taken him out in this cave, but God would have seen it. God would have known. And I'm not going to do that. And to me, I think David is, if you will, you know, rising to a standard, you know, that was really like an amazing heart, the heart of a king, so that all of his men that are following David, they're watching him going, David had a chance to kill him and he didn't do it. Wonder why. Years later, 8-9 years later, after this particular incident, when David does take the throne, he's going to be able to stand tall and his men are going to have a deeper respect for him than if he would have taken him out right there on that spot. Sometimes we say, well, the ends justify the means. Not always. In fact, I've rarely seen that they do. And David found that out because his men would respect him even greater because he waited for God to take care of things. And so it's interesting that, you know, David, at this particular time in his life, he had a proper view of sin. And he knew that if I kill Saul, it would be sin. I'm taking over the kingdom through sinful means. And you know what, man? I'm telling you, I want to encourage you as brothers and sisters in business, as brothers and sisters in leadership, as parents, as grandparents, as cousins, as uncles, don't cut corners. Don't cut the corners. Something that David recognized, and I know it's kind of a pun on words, but, you know, it's an amazing thing. You know, if you rise above and you stay above and you don't take the shortcut, God will bless that. I'm telling you, He will bless it. And so take a look at all of the way, another point that we want to make, that God sets this whole thing up. Why? Did He set it up for David to kill him? No, He set it up to reveal the loyal heart that David had. That David recognized, wait a minute, this guy is the king. God put him there. And so when God's done with him, God can take him out. And so what I wanted you to see is, or let me ask you a question. Has Saul shown himself to be a man that David should respect? Not at all. In fact, Saul's being it. He's a jerk. I mean, David could have literally come out and said, hey, you idiot. He could have taken him, he could have beat him up in that cave. Well, I'm not going to kill him, but I'll make him wish he was dead. He could have done that, couldn't he have? He could have, you know, really said some mean things to him. He could have put the sword to his neck and say, you stop chasing me. It ends here. You keep chasing me. Next time I kill you myself. He could have done that, couldn't he have? Instead, what does he do? My Lord, the king. My father. The Lord's anointed. He refers to him with this amazing respect and amazing honor. And you know what I see in this, you guys? For me, for you, for all of us in this room, is there someone in your life that you may say, you know what? The guy's a jerk, or that person's not, you know, I really don't care for that person. They haven't done anything to earn my respect. But yet we see here that David respected the position, even though he didn't respect the person. And I think there's a huge lesson for all of us right there in that particular passage. Because there may be people in your life that you may say, you know what, I don't respect him or I don't respect her, but I respect the Lord, and God has put that person in my life, so I will respect that position. I will respect their position that they have as my brother, as my sister, as my boss, or as whatever that person may be, a position they may be in. That we can respect the position even though the person hasn't earned our respect or maybe even done something to cause us to lose our respect for that person. I think that for David, man, can you imagine when all of his 600 guys are, as David walks out and he's holding the corner of the robe and he says, "My Lord the King," and he bows down. You can imagine all of his guys going, "What's he doing?" But afterwards, when David would be able to turn around and say, "You guys, you respect the position even if you don't respect the person." David is, see, he's leading. He's leading this group of men. The men now are going to slowly begin to elevate him to a position of, wow, that's the kind of king we want. That's the kind of king that we can respect. That's the kind of man I'll follow. You get the picture? Do you want to be like David or do you want to be like Saul? Do you want to be a person that people respect and say, that's a person I will follow? Or do you want to be a guy like Saul that says, well, I don't respect him, but I'll respect the position? It's up to us. And I think that the way we see David living is the way we see it. So, verse 14, look what happens. After whom has the king of Israel come out? Whom do you pursue? A dead dog? A flea? During this particular time, if you were to tell someone, you know, you're a dead dog, that's like the ultimate disrespectful phrase that you can refer to someone. You're a dead dog. David refers to himself as one. Now that's interesting because, in essence, David is kind of challenging Saul. Saul, you got thousands of guys out here chasing me. I'm nothing. I'm nobody. Not a very wise use of your resources, Saul. You got people that you should be taking care of, and you're out chasing me around. I'm like a flea hopping from place to place. And you're using all these resources and all this money to try to find me. Interesting. So David is not elevating himself. Therefore, he says, "Let the Lord be judge, and judge between you and me, and see, and plead my case, and deliver me out of your hand." In other words, hey, if God is for me, then he will protect me from you. And if God is not for you, then you're going down, buddy. And so it was, verse 16. When David had finished speaking these words to Saul. Now, understand. Think this through with me for a moment. David comes out, holds up the corner of his robe, bows down in front of him, gives him this speech, and look what Saul says. "Is this your voice, my son David?" This shows you how, man, tweaked Saul is at this particular point in his life. "Is that you, David?" Well, he's only been talking to you for about the past 15 minutes. He's only showed you the piece of the robe. He's only been bowing down in front of you. And Saul lifted up his voice and he wept. Then he said to David, "You are more righteous than I." Is that true? Absolutely. "For you have rewarded me with good, whereas I have rewarded you with evil." Now let me explain something to you right there. Let's just look at three different scenarios right here. When someone does something that is evil to you and you reward it with good, Jesus refers to that as a righteous man. Now then, that would be a godly person that when someone attacks you or attacks me and we respond with something that is righteous and we give a righteous response, that is evidence of a godly character. You get the picture? Okay, what happens if someone does something that is good to you and you do something good in return? When Jesus spoke of that, he says, even the tax collectors will do that. So on a human fleshly level, hey, you know, you treat me right, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. We've heard that saying before, right? But now, when we look at Saul, David has done nothing wrong to Saul whatsoever. And what did Saul just say that he was doing to David? You have done righteous things, you have done good things to me, and I have done what is evil to you. That is a man of the flesh. When somebody treats you with respect and with honor, and then we treat that person with disrespect or with dishonor, that is evidence of a fleshly person, you see? So three different kinds of responses. When somebody treats us with evil, we respond with good. That is evidence of, really, of a righteous man. Treat people good that treat you good, everybody can do that. Treat somebody evil that has treated you good, you're in the flesh, you see? And so, interesting picture that we see, David, the righteous one, Saul in the flesh. Where do you want to be? What comes out of your heart when this kind of thing takes place in our life? Interesting thing to ponder on. When somebody confronts you, when something transpires in your life, what erupts out of your life? And I thought that was an interesting admission by Saul himself. And so, where were we? Verse 18. And you have shown this day how you have dealt well with me. For when the Lord delivered me into your hand. So now David's recognized it, and now Saul even recognized it. Interesting. Deliver me into your hand, you did not kill me. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him get away safely? And see, that's interesting that Saul recognizes that David should view him as his enemy, but David does not view him as his enemy. Therefore, may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. And look at verse 20, I highlighted this one. And now I know indeed that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. So what did Saul just admit in front of all of David's men? You're going to be the next king. I see it. What led him to make that statement? The action of David, that he did not take him out, that he bowed down, he honored him, he showed him great respect and great honor. Saul then just admits in front of all his guys, plus he's got 3,000 guys that are waiting down in the valley. What do you think they just heard? David, you're going to be the next king. You see, this action that David took is already bearing fruit. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Therefore, he says, swear now to me by the Lord that you will not cut off my descendants after me. And I wonder, you see, if that's an interesting connection to the robe cutting incident here. And that you will not destroy my name from my father's house. And so David swore to Saul. And Saul went home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. And that is probably, very quite possibly, Masada, which is just down the road from where En-Gedi is at. Interesting. David did keep his promise. I showed you that a few weeks ago where Mephibosheth, the crippled son of Jonathan, David goes and finds him and takes care of him. So Saul knew that his lineage was not going to inherit the kingdom. He just openly admitted it. But David, this amazing, wise leader, he knew how to interpret God's will and God's word. And he didn't allow the pressure to cause him to change his viewpoint of that. And David, as we see, giving this honorable behavior to a man that didn't deserve any honor, it's an amazing picture. So let me ask you a question. David keeps his promise. Will Saul keep his? Unfortunately, no. We get one chapter of a break, and then we get into chapter 26, and Saul is trying to hunt David down again. He can't stand it. Even though he knows the truth, he knows what's happening. He knows that David is going to be the next king. He can't stand it. And so he heads out, he tries to get him. And so let me show you something. We're finished here, so turn to Proverbs chapter 16. Turn to the right to Proverbs 16. Let me show you something. Show you an interesting proverb. Proverbs 16, 32. Proverbs 16, 32. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. And he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. In other words, it takes a strong man to control his spirit. Any weakling could choose to lose his temper. That can happen anytime. Any weakling can do the wrong thing. Any of us are capable. I mean, that doesn't take any self-control to not get in the flesh, does it? Getting in the flesh comes natural to me, you guys. Getting angry comes natural. Getting frustrated comes natural. Being insecure and all of these other things, that comes natural, doesn't it? It takes a strong person, it takes godly character to do good to those that are doing, if you will, evil to us. And so to me, in this particular, the way this kind of ends up is David, when he was standing there, and this is something that I learned from Pastor Chuck Smith, and I think that hopefully you're learning it from your pastor, is if I'm going to make a mistake, I want to make it a mistake on the side of grace. Because God has an easier way of cleaning those mistakes up than when I make a mistake on the side of the flesh. Those make huge messes. So if I'm going to err, I want to err on the side of grace. David, I believe that at this particular point says, no, we're not killing him. If I'm going to make a mistake, it's going to be on the side of grace. And that was an amazing picture for David. So what do we see as we wrap this up right here? David was confronted with a situation where God revealed his heart. He revealed the content of his heart. And what was in there? It was good. It was purity. It was respect. It was honor. It was, if you will, submission to God's will, not fear of a man. And look at what happened. David became the greatest king that Israel ever knew. And we're beginning to see that king starting to show up in David's life right here, you see? This king, as God is elevating him up or revealing to his men, here's a man you can follow. And so to me, and when I look at that, I say, man, Lord, that's an amazing picture. And I'll tell you, God is in the business every day. We will go through circumstance after circumstance after circumstance, after trial, after difficulty, after challenge, after storm, or whatever it is. All of us will go through those on a daily basis. Don't focus on the trial. Don't focus on the circumstance. Lord, what are you trying to teach me about me? What are you trying to reveal to me about what's in my heart? You ask that question. You pray that prayer, and that's how we grow. I'm telling you. Because there are so many different things that we face, so many different things that go on in our life. And it's either, Lord, I'm going to trust you. Lord, I want to grow with you. Lord, I want you to be the one that is ultimately seen. And if we will learn that lesson, then we don't look at our situation and our circumstance. We don't focus in on that so much. It's kind of, you know, those, I think I've shared with you guys before. I've had, you know, husbands tell me on many occasions, Rob, you just don't know. She knows how to push my buttons. And I've had wives tell me the same thing. Rob, you don't understand. When he does that, it gets me so angry. The conclusion is then that if he's not in my life, I won't get angry. If she's not in my life, she won't push my buttons. Not true. The truth is, it's God showing you that you still have anger in your heart. It's God showing us that we still have buttons that can be pushed. And he's saying, that's what I want to deal with. Mari and I have that old saying that, you know, we you can put a wagon in and put all the rotten apples underneath and put nice clean ones on the top. But the first bump you hit, what's it going to reveal? We get all angry. That's a stupid bump. Why did that have to happen in my life? But the truth of the matter is, God is saying, because I want to show you the rotten apples down there. And we kick the bump, and we get angry at the bump, and we get angry at the person. But in all reality, what we should be doing is saying, Lord, whoa, I didn't realize that there was anger still in there. I didn't know that my temper was still there. I didn't know that I was still so insecure. I didn't know that that was... Look at it and say, that's what I want to give to you, Lord. I want to give you that anger that is still there. I want to give you that insecurity that is still there. I want to give you that disrespect that is still there. I want to give you that weakness, whatever it is. That's how we grow. And that's what God is about. Over and over and over, we've seen that throughout the scriptures. What is he showing you? What did he show you today? What did he show you yesterday? Or last week? Only you and God know. We give it to him. Let's pray, shall we? Lord, we thank you for this time in your word. And I pray, Lord, that as we have contemplated these things, Lord, each of us are sitting here tonight, and maybe you just took us through a test today to reveal the content of our heart. I know you did for me. I know you did. And I pray, Lord, that each of us will grow. We will learn to trust you more and more each day. More and more, we will be able to see the character and the nature of Jesus Christ coming out of our lives. Less and less of us and more of you. And so tonight, Lord, bless us. Teach us, Lord. Help us to see what you're trying to reveal to us to help us to grow. In your name we pray. Amen.